Rob Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, Richard Roper is here, and Richard Roper is doing some reviewing.
And some movies that I kind of want to see just by their cast, but I need to know.
You want to get in the mood for Ocean's 8 and play like a little hipster jazzy clip from the film itself? How about that?
I want this to be so good.
Hold on. Richard Roper being brought to you by Arkadek.
Yes.
Got a little clip? Ocean's 8 clip?
Good afternoon, Miss Ocean. As you know, parole is a privilege.
It's a mistake, but it happened. And if I were to be released, I would just want the simple life. I just want to hold down a job, make some friends. You know, pay my bills.
Even if this was possible, you'd need 20 people.
7 people.
Why do you need to do this?
Because it's what I'm good at.
Okay. This is Sandra Bullock playing George Clooney's little sister.
Debbie Ocean. He was Danny Ocean. I'm going to drill down for a second on that scene you just heard. That's Sandra Bullock as Debbie Ocean in front of the parole board. The very opening scene of the movie. Talk about what she'll do if she gets paroled, right? If you go back and look at the original, not the original from the 60s, but the 2001 Ocean's 11 with George Clooney.
That's how 11.
Nicely done, Sammy. But the original of the reboot, the Steven Soderbergh film.
Yes.
They start with the same scene. That movie started with George Clooney's character, Danny Ocean, facing the parole board. Mm-hmm. But if you go back and look at that scene, you could do this as a YouTube side-by-side. In that scene, when they ask him what he'll do if he gets out, all George Clooney does is change the focus in his eyes. We know that he's going to get into trouble. Sandra Bullock's character gives this long speech, and that is the difference in quality between these two films. Whereas the first Oceans in the 2000s was so slick and smart and sly and, you know, knew the audience was smart and could keep up with things. This one, unfortunately, spells everything out. That scene is indicative of the entire movie. And it's such a disappointment because you have this terrific cast. Everybody's seen the posters and the trailers and all this.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Sandra Bullock and Cate Blanchett
Rihanna. Anne Hathaway.
Awkwafina, one of my favorite actresses, I think, if you go through all of them.
I love her water.
You know, this terrific cast. And I like the fact that it's not a reboot like Ghostbusters was from a few years ago, where they basically told the same story with the female cast. Mm-hmm. It is a spin-off. And they keep teasing. You know, the opening scene, again, not a big spoiler alert. One of the opening scenes, Deborah Ocean, she's estranged from her big brother, Danny Ocean.
That's because they couldn't get Clooney to be in the movie.
Yeah, and she visits his grave. And, you know, she's got a martini, and she's got at one point, and she's saying, well, if you are really dead. And there's about two or three other occasions where they say, if he is really dead. So you keep waiting for him to show up. Is he going to show up?
Wait a second. Did I miss this? Did I miss the last Ocean's movie?
He didn't get killed in it. But
did they kill him off in a movie?
If it's in the real timeline, the last one was 10 years ago, okay? So, you know, things could have happened. They never really get into the details. And, you know, listen, I'm not going to tease people and tell them the joke George Clooney's in this movie. He's not in this movie, okay? Some references and callbacks to the other movies, but he is not in this film. And I think it's a bit of a tease for the film to keep doing that when you don't have him. You know, that, like, oh, well, if you're really dead.
Well, is that also to keep... First of all, who owns the Ocean's franchise?
Oh, it's split, I think, because, you know, you've got the original writers and producers of the film from the early 60s.
The Sinatra film.
It'll say to this day, based on characters created by, based on the, you know, that film.
Right.
And then you've got Soderbergh's a producer on this one. The director's Gary Ross, which is an interesting thing, too. He's a great director and film writer. He wrote Forrest Gump. He directed Seabiscuit. He's terrific. I mean, but... I'm all for people, you know, getting the best person for the job. But it is interesting that a man in his 60s would be doing this all female take on Ocean's 8. And there are some critics who've said, and I would agree with them, it seems almost a little bit like a man's idea of what an all female caper would be like. Because they, you know, the robbery takes place at the Met. So there's a lot of Met gala porn, all about the dresses and the, you know, it's the most lavish social evening. Mm-hmm. And they're going after a necklace and they're all ooing and eyeing over the necklace. And Sandra Bullock's character, her primary motive is revenge on a boyfriend who dumped her. And another character at one point, she says she wants to join the gang because she doesn't have any female friends. All of that sounds like a 1958 movie about female bank robbers or heist masterminds, if you will.
So at the end of the day here.
Yes.
With Ocean's 8, which I really want to love because I love Steven Soderbergh. We had the great honor of having Steven Soderbergh in the studio and talking to him. He is a he's a filmmaking genius. He's at that. He's at the very best of this century's filmmakers. I want him to win all the time.
Right.
Did he win here as a producer?
No, it's a 2.5-star movie. Not bad at all because you do have in the cast. Listen, when you've got Academy Award winners, you've got Anne Hathaway, Sandra Bullock, Cate Blanchett, all Academy Award winners. Rihanna's great as a dope smoking hacker. Kind of called Nine Ball. Because what's your real name? She says Eight Ball, which is kind of there's some moments, and it's got that quick cut feel of the other Ocean's movies, but the heist itself isn't that clever. You remember in the first Ocean's when they ticked down the Bellagio, when they showed us what we didn't see the first time, all the little tricks that were being pulled on us, and then you go, oh, they tied that all together. They don't have that moment here. And the other thing they don't have is a good villain. Andy Garcia was a good villain in the first one. Right? And the Julia Roberts, dynamic with George Clooney, and we don't have that. There is an ex-boyfriend. He's a dope. He's not even, they dismiss him with, it doesn't even take anything. So there's not that, real sense of danger as well. Clearly they had a lot of fun making it. They all look great and they're good together. Some of the actors, including, I think, Mindy Kaling in particular, criminally underused. I wanted to see more of some of those characters. I think it'll do okay, but don't rush out to see it if you're thinking this is going to be like the, female empowerment heist movie of all time. It's not.
Oh, that's too bad.
2.5 stars. Oh, that's not a recommendation.
I did want it to be that movie.
All right.
But there probably will be an Ocean's 9.
With the female cast? They'll come back?
With some of them, and some of them won't.
Aquafina be back?
I think you can start.
I really prefer Dasani in that role.
Yeah.
Can I ask you this?
Smart water.
Will there be another George Clooney Ocean's movie?
I don't think so. And
think he's done with Danny Ocean?
I think all the guys are. And
so Soderbergh, you think Soderbergh is actually burying him?
I think he's listed as an executive. I mean, he's brought a financial interest in this and an ownership. I don't know how hands-on he was. I mean, Steven Soderbergh. And I think, if you go back, by the third Oceans, it was not a good film either. It got way too wink at the camera.
You mean when
smug.
They were in Amsterdam?
Yeah,
that
and
one?
Julia Roberts' character that is impersonating Julia Roberts.
Yes. Yeah.
You know who you look like. Whenever a movie starts doing that, you know who you look like.
Yeah.
Plus it's John Malkovich,
And she was pregnant. Wasn't she pregnant at the time? And they had to fake that they had to make her pregnant. Like she was faking a pregnancy because that way it paid off on her being pregnant. Yeah, it did get you could tell that they were time crunched to do it. Mm-hmm. The first Ocean's 11 and Ocean's 12.
Yeah.
Were quite great.
I think so too. I agree. I think the third one, they called it Ocean's 13. They could have called it Ocean's Contractual Obligation for a lot of them. We're going to have to do three films,
felt
guys.
Felt that way.
Go back if you get a chance and watch the. I've gone back and watched the original, and it's great just to see the Rat Pack and everything. And that's got a really cool twist ending.
Yeah, but it's not.
But it's not a great film.
The movie does it. It strings out. It's great to watch. Great to sit and late at night, have a few drinks, and watch that movie. But it is, it's a guilty pleasure more than it is a great movie.
Yeah, it's not a great script.
And 11 and 12, and when you see Bernie Mac's work, now 13 gets a little wacky, because of that. But you get to see Bernie Mac, and I just miss Bernie Mac.
Yeah, he's wonderful in that. Well, yeah, go back and watch the Ocean's 11. I did about a month ago, and that movie just still cracks and pops and just sizzles.
The
first Clooney Pitt one. And count how many times Brad Pitt's character eats in the movie.
Right, there's a whole bit to that. Yeah. All right, Richard Roper,
there's a
movie
Lots
coming up. Just wait, hold on a second here, because this is big.
Okay.
There's a movie that is coming out that some people who have seen say is the scariest movie of the century so far. It's called Hereditary, and we will talk about that next. All right, Richard Roper is here. We're doing some reviewing. Some people say that this is the scariest movie of the 21st century. It's called Hereditary, and it's Toni Collette is in this film. Mm-hmm. You may remember her from The Sixth Sense, right? She was the mom in The Sixth Sense.
Oh, yes.
That was a very scary, creepy movie, wasn't it?
She was playing a mom of a son and realized some things that she thought the son was making up turned out to be true.
Bruce Willis was dead the whole time.
Oh, my gosh.
Spoiler alert. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
19 years and he thinks it's okay.
Really?
I mean, I figured it out in the first scene, but
you
that's just
not.
Me.
I did. You did.
I definitely
not.
Didn't. I definitely
Nobody
did.
Figured that one out. Who wasn't told? It was like The Crying Game. Unless someone told you,
I just knew there
you
was a
know.
Big twist, and all I knew was a big twist. And then I'm watching the first scene. I'm like, he's dead.
Wahlberg's whitey tighties gave it away.
He's dead. He's dead. He's already dead. All right. Anyway, but that's not the point. Hereditary is the point.
So now, almost 20 years later, Toni Collette again. And by the way, she got a Best Supporting Actress nomination for that film, and she's going to get a Best Actress nomination for Hereditary. She's once again playing a mother whose own mother, shall we say, was very cold and distant and had some very interesting kind of hobbies.
Uh-oh.
Kind of in the Rosemary's Baby level
no.
kind of hobbies. And I'm not saying this is a possession film because it's not. But now she's just buried her mother. But there's some indications that maybe mom's still sticking around. And now Toni Collette's character has a son who's a teenager and a daughter named Charlie who's an odd, a very, 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 very odd child. The kind of child who sees a dead bird then rips the head off the bird and carries the head around in her pocket just as a keepsake of the moment. You know, that kind of child. Mm-hmm. And then something really, 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 really bad happens to the family. And now Toni Collette's character is starting to think, like, maybe I should try to communicate with the outside world. In the meantime, though, she is having dinner with her husband, played by the great Gabriel Byrne, who was in The Usual Suspects. And by the way, Kaiser Soze was not Gabriel Byrne, speaking of twist endings. And now they are...
Why'd you do that one, Kev? Yeah. Kevin Powell was Kaiser Soze.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
So this is a little... I've got a little clip here I want to play real quick, because this is a dinner scene. Let's just say that the son has caused a lot of heartache and tragedy for the family. And there might have been a moment where mom even maybe soaked the son in gasoline and tried to lit him up. There's all kinds of weirdness going on, but so just imagine the dinner tableau that happens.
You okay, Mom?
What?
Is there something on your mind?
Is there something on your mind?
It just seems like there might be something you want to say.
Yeah.
Like what? I mean, why would I want to... say something so I could watch you sneer at me.
Sneer at you? I don't ever sneer at you.
Oh, sweetie, you don't have to. You get your point across.
Okay, so fine. Then say what you want to say, then.
Peter.
I don't want to say anything. I've tried saying
So try again. Release yourself.
Oh, release you, you mean?
Yeah, fine. Release me. Just say it. Just say it.
Don't you swear at me, you little Don't you ever raise your voice at me. I am your mother. Do you understand?
That sounded like my birthday dinner two nights ago. God. What is going on there?
Well, there's a lot going on there, as I attempted to set up for you. So to suffice to say, there's a lot of tension in the family, but also a lot of family bonds, and things get creepier and creepier and weirder and weirder. And usually in a movie, when Anne Dowd shows up, that tells you there might be trouble, too. She was the actress in The Leftovers, was kind of the leader of that group with the white sheets and all that, you know. And she shows up and is going to help Toni Collette communicate with people from the other dimension. And this thing really goes for it. I will tell you that. There's one scene in particular that will probably have some people walking out, because usually when like something like that happens to a character, they'll take the camera and pull away, or they're like, oh, that's not really going to happen. It really happens. And then it really just flies off the rails. It's really brilliantly done. And
is
like
it super scary? Yeah.
It's super scary, but it's not a gotcha. It's not anybody in a mask with a knife chasing you around.
Chilling, haunting.
Yeah, it very deliberate in the first hour. Almost nothing of huge consequence happens, but everything just seems very forbidding. Everything.
So
every
you're
time
constantly
you turn,
on the edge of your seats?
Constantly. The house itself. Beautiful house in the woods, but you just think, like, what's going on over there? Yeah. And on top of everything else, her character, Toni Collette's character, is an artist who's a miniaturist, and you should see the creepy little miniature tableau she puts in the little dollhouse.
Okay.
There. Four stars! Four stars!
Wow.
It lives up to the hype. I believe it will be this year's Get Out in terms of getting Oscar consideration, even though it's in that horror genre.
When did that change? I mean, has that ever...
Last year.
Last year. Get out.
All right, very quickly, Hotel Artemis, Jodie Foster.
2.5 stars, disappointing. We love Jodie Foster, but that's disappointing. And then Nicolas Cage is in 2.11, and probably the most interesting thing about this movie, he plays a cop, and it's not any good, but they called it 2.11, so it'll show up very, very, at the very top of every queue of all time, because it's numbers, 2.11. That's why they call it that.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It's like scanner code for a robbery, but they call it 2.11 with the numbers.
That's like the Acme Anvil
cheating.
Company.
Yes.
That's the only way they were able to sell anvils. Yeah,
that was the move.
All right, here we go.